Welcome to Seize the GM. I'm your host, Zendad.
I'm your co-host, Jules.
And I'm Null Operations.
Have you ever had a great idea for a campaign? Do you have a bunch of friends who want to play an RPG but have no one to run it?
Do you want to see what the world is like behind the GM screen instead of in front of it? Well, we're here to help you do just that.
Each week, the three of us will be discussing various GMing topics. Terminology, maps, atmosphere, world building, you name it. So sit back and relax, and let us help you improve your art of GMing, one show at a time.
Banter, banter, banter. And we are entering the banter segment.
So, Justin, what are you doing?
I am dangerously close to finish writing a book.
Amazing. Finally. Mm-hmm. Is this first draft?
First draft.
Awesome.
I already know there is a volume of work that is required to get it to remotely appearing editable.
Right.
But first draft is the important draft, because once it's written, then it's fixable. You can't fix what's not written.
That is true. That is very true.
Yeah, and now that it's, when it gets done, you have like, this is a thing I have created. Ta-da, look at my thing.
Exactly. It'll be my second ever full-length book that has actually finished and not stopped in the middle somewhere randomly.
Oh, that's good.
Mm-hmm.
That's really good, actually.
Now, it will probably be the first one I ever sell, because that other one I never got around to editing the first draft. And it's been a good 5 years since I wrote that.
Yeah.
So I really had to pretty much rewrite the entire thing, because I go look back and look at it now and I'm like, this is trash, this is trash, so this out, this is trash, this is trash. Oh, look, I have like 5 sentences left.
Yeah.
So.
Oh, sure. But that's what why you write and then edit, and you decide what is worth keeping and what isn't.
Exactly.
So, yeah. That is awesome. So are you going to be running anything soon?
Well, I did tell my friends that once the book was done, I may get up and running a Numenera campaign soon. Maybe.
Nice.
But I've been toying around with maybe trying to get into MechWarrior.
Aha.
So we'll see.
Okay. All right. Cool. All right, Jules, what have you been up to? I just love doing that.
Yeah. You ninja.
I know.
Yeah. Oh, God. I wish I had done something like awesome and spectacular. I am sorry I haven't. I wish I had. But let's see. We've got. So yeah, I'm starting to prep for Origins. Starting to prep for Gen Con. Prepping for the copious amounts of appointments coming up.
Yeah.
Yay. It stinks. But let's see. I think. Oh, yeah, I forgot. This is kind of good. One of my buddies I met when I decided to go back to college as a full-grown adult now, woohoo, good buddy of mine, love her to death. She and her husband, she's from Acapulco and fluent in Spanish, the whole nine yards. So, you know, she's read my writing. Second, she really, really, really likes my writing. I'm not fluent in Spanish anymore, but one of the things that I wrote last year, you know, I used what Spanish I had, and she proved it. There was only one grammatical mistake.
Cool.
She actually wants to, she's like, I want to read more of what's going on with this story. And you guys know the character Dirtnap, my buddy Orland plays.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. You know, the only troll to survive a cranial bomb. And it's kind of awesome, because that's kind of made it kind of sort of into Shadowrun canon, which cracks me up. But wanted to write more about him. And part of his story is he he was a mercenary and did a lot of that kind of guerrilla warfare in Amazonia. And this all happened before. So, you know, she's actually going to, you know, help proofread. And for certain aspects in Mexico, like certain, you know, visual things, certain parts of the culture that I might not be aware of, she's going to help me put that together. And she's like, I want to read more of it. And, you know, she's an anime nut, and her husband, dude, makes the best fondue. The guy can cook, and so can she. I'm so jealous. I wish I could do I'm good. They're better. But, you know, she's really interested in the world of Shadowrun. She wouldn't have read anything about it, except I'm like, hey, can you check this for grammar? And she's like, this is awesome. So now I have, and she's like, look, your grammar is actually pretty good. You're, you know, the accents are right. The spelling's right. You know, so that was actually kind of cool. So she's, and I also, she's like, I know you're on podcasts. Which ones are you on? You're going to add me on. I'm like, huh? She's like, I want to listen to them all. And she's my height. She's my height. And she's this beautiful, beautiful, feisty little Mexican chica. I love her to death. She's amazing. So I signed her up for listening to The Hidden Grid, for listening to Seize the GM, and listening to 5 Degrees Off Normal. She nice. Told me, I was like, I downloaded everything. When do you start? I'm like, okay, Hidden Grid starts in 2016. So she's like, oh, okay. And she's like, all right, I'm going to listen to everything. I'm like, there's a lot of stuff. She's like, all right, what's this better? I'm like, and I explained all three of the podcasts. She's like, all right, which one is better then? They all sound good. I'm like, they're not. They're just different. She's like, it's like, this is going to be hard. I'm like, she couldn't decide. It was cute. And, you know, I love her to death. She's like sunshine is the best way to describe this girl. I love her so much. It's like a personal cheerleader, but you know, but you know, she'll kick the running back right in the nuts if you cross her.
That is nice. Amazing.
Yeah. I hopefully if all goes, and also this, I got her hooked on, you know, some of the Shadowrun writers and a couple of the artists. She Very likes cool. some of the styles, you know, she likes some of the noir stuff that Rusty did. I'm like, ooh, yeah. Well, this is going to be fun. So, yeah, I didn't do anything good, but I think I might have hooked one of my friends tangentially, another friend tangentially, into the world of gaming.
That is great.
Always a good thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so we're bringing over board games, and we're actually going to be using some board games to help shore up my Spanish and help her husband. Pretty much is like, if it's a game that doesn't have like written instruction, you know, where words are on the page,
yeah,
like Dixit or something, we're doing the whole thing in Spanish.
Oh, nice.
Cool.
She's, yeah. So imagine that, you know. Like, wow. I want to be that awesome when I grow up. So I'm sorry, guys. I rambled a bit there. How about you, Zendad? You can't just, you know, come on. No. You've got the awesomeness and the 12-hour workday.
Well, they've been 10 and a half to 11. And that's been going on for about 3 weeks now. I was explaining to Null a little earlier that how it works, and it's ridiculous. So
you did the heating pad?
I had my wife came in, she rubbed my shoulder trying to get the knot out. I took lots of ibuprofen and it helped the first night, the second night, which was, you know, yesterday, trying to record, and I couldn't even sit up for very long before I had to lay down.
It was bad, you know, because the snow on the East Coast.
Yeah.
Which was weird. It's like, we're getting winter all at once.
Yeah.
You know?
All again.
Uh-huh. You know, so, like, you know, my husband's D&D game was canceled. He was all shot, like, Jones in a play Shadowrun. I'm like, sweetie,
yeah.
Zendad broke himself, and he's just like,
I know.
The look on his face.
I know. I hated doing it, but it was either I do that or
No, he understood because he went to the back doctor today and he's like, I got to find all my old tests. Yeah. Instead of one herniated disc in his neck, the herniated disc in his neck is reduced, but now he has one in the lower part of his back. Now he's got two.
Well, I mean, it's compensating. Who wants to be lonely, right?
That's true.
But it's you know, I got to run my game Saturday finally after like scheduling fiascos that take forever sometimes because, you know, everybody's an adult. And I was down one player and I'm just like, we're still playing. I'm tired of taking weeks off. So we played. It was just two players and they're in the dungeon. They've got everybody's already there. So we just kind of like ad-libbed characters and just made it work so they could just pound through some more of this. Because they've got maybe three sessions left, and they have made it halfway through an entire adventure path, which puts them at, I want to say when they finish this, it puts them somewhere around 9th or 10th level.
You know, that reminds me of a campaign I ran once upon a time with a group of friends.
Yeah.
I had at least, I want to say, 12 or 13 people who wanted to play a campaign. And, you know, that was impossible.
Yeah.
So I ended up running a campaign over the phone with one player at a time.
Oh, weird.
And so what happened was I had these maps for at least the first couple levels of this vast dungeon laid out. And they would play and they would run past the statues of the other players. Because you turned to stone when you weren't playing.
Oh, that's fun.
So they actually got a pretty decent down before we had to kind of end it because I was on the phone too much and my dad was like, no.
Yeah.
But beyond that, it was pretty cool.
That's awesome. I've never thought about running something like that over the phone. I mean, I've done Skype. I've, you know, thought about a couple of other things. But, I mean, hell yeah, you're already on Skype. Why not do it over the phone?
Yeah. What can I say? You know, playing remote games has always been my thing.
It has. It has. But yeah. The stories that come from that are the important things.
Oh, you call them war stories.
Well, not just war because stories, but the stories that the games themselves take.
Yeah, but we still call them war stories because it's like a bunch of old grizzled veterans sitting around a table describing, you know, X, Y, and Z. And we will all do the same. You know, it's like, oh, I started out doing this, and then they did this, and then X, you know, it's not just how awesome my character was, but we'll, you know, the GMs, all of us will, like, kind of sit around, and you're like, dude, you ain't gonna believe this. Yeah. It was so cool. And it's like how they might have derailed part of it in the coolest and most awesome way. It's war stories. It's like, yeah. It's. I'm not saying like, oh, awesome character event. It's the. This is the awesome game.
Yeah. Yeah. So. Now I'm gonna jump right in here to our main topic because. It was mentioned that. Way back when we started talking about organizing for games, where there's, basically three. Big elements that you need to organize for your game. That being NPCs, locations, and the story. Because you have, with NPCs and locations, you know you have to organize all of those pieces. But organizing for the story that you want to tell can be a little trickier because it's not organization in the traditional manner, usually. Because I know when I do it, it's a little different than, you know, what other people have done in the past. I generally, because I rely so heavily on Scrivener for my game notes and organizing everything, I actually keep my story outline on that so that I can always go back to it. And I don't try to, you know, itemize out like 10 steps from one element, I try to keep it a little more vague so that the players have room to explore inside the story that you're telling. And a lot of times, one of the things I also do is I have like, you know, what is the theme of the story? What is the general tone of the story? And then like a couple of sentence write-up of the big overarching, you know, what is the story about? And then breaking it down from there. That's how I do it. It's not always easy because I have to do a lot of going back in and changing things because I do it that way. And I allow it to be done so that other people, so that if I something were to happen and I had to step away, somebody else could theoretically just step right in and continue running my story with the notes that I've laid out between the story, the NPC, and everything. Like, if they open up my Scrivener file for the campaign, they have it all. I mean, yeah, you may need to go over here and open this program or this program to do a few other things, but most of my notes are contained within that. So, that's how I do it.
I cannot say the same thing, because most of the things I have for my story and organization, I mean, yeah, I do use things like OneNote to kind of track some NPCs and stats for numbers, but in terms of the overall storyline, it's all up here, he says, knocking on wood. That is his head. I keep it all up there. Because it evolves over time, it evolves and changes, so much so that, you know, I could change my mind about how an NPC might feel about something between sessions. Just because it's like, you know, I think it might actually make more sense to do this.
Oh, sure, but that's why I try to organize all of those things and try to keep, like, remember how I said, like, with my NPCs, I have a relationship web.
Mm-hmm.
And I will go in and I will change those relationship webs if I'm, like, doing something and I'm like, oh, dude, yeah, this idea, and then I'll just, like, open it up and start working on it. And keep all of those. And then I've even gone so far as to, like, with each NPC that impacts the story, like, have where they link into the story so that you can keep track of where they're at and what their trajectory throughout the story is.
Hmm.
Yeah.
That works.
I try to make this really intricate web when I'm actually running something that isn't pre-published. So, what I may end up doing is whenever we get around to starting my Underdark campaign, I may release some of the files after the fact.
Can't trust the players during it?
Well, one of my players has already told me that he listens to the show. Like, I literally can't tell too many things now because he listens. Which is awesome.
Have a disclaimer segment of, we're now getting ready to tell stuff about Zendad's campaign. Listen, players of his campaign, tune to X number of minutes in the future.
Joe, stop listening and pick up here.
Yeah. Hey, please fast forward to XYZ start time.
Yeah, because, I mean, it's almost that to that point where it's like, I want to talk about some of it, but I have to be just vague enough. But once we actually start the campaign, that'll be different. And I can talk about things that we've already done. And I'll probably end up posting some of those files either in blog posts or something so that people can comment on them and tell me what you would do different once we get to that point. Or maybe if we get enough people in the Patreon, then we could do that. Maybe use that as the world building thing, and then only people that are patrons couldn't see it.
We'll see if they bite.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't do either of that.
Yeah.
You guys are like, it's so cool because both of you are like polar opposite. And it's like everything's in the head with a rough outline. And you're like, notes, basic idea of a plot, notes. You know, it's, you know, one is a little bit more improv, one is a little bit more scripted, and it's awesome. But me is, I don't usually start with a story. I'll have a couple of fun things, you know, like in Shadowrun, okay, do a dead drop. Or in D&D, a quick dungeon crawl. Mm-hmm. And they start the story. I don't come up with an idea first.
Oh, see, that's actually how I am with campaigns.
But the thing is, though, there's no, you know, it's like I start these as pretty much the best way to put it is a one shot.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'll start them as a one shot, and then and then once the players, because the thing is, like, I'd never start with the story. Mm-hmm. After they play, you know, like a module or something like that, so they can get the feel and get that, that's when I put the story in. I don't start it at the beginning. They've already been playing before I actually throw the story in. And because they're not really sure if, you know, module or story or what have you. And what I'll do is, I don't know if you guys have ever seen the tension / excitement story curve for Star Wars.
I think I may have at one point. Came out a while ago, right?
Kind of sort. It's just this stupid little kind of graph, you know, and it's, you know, it starts off pretty, like, epic, you know, with the stormtroopers and Darth Vader swarming the ship, mm-hmm. you know, high action, and then you eject the droids, and, you know, now they're on Tatooine. It's a little bit more, and then, you know, Luke buys the robots. Hey, tension goes back again. They find Obi-Wan, you know, it's that kind of a thing. So what I'll do is, you, in order to get your players in, for me, you know, just throwing the story at them, so you have to give them, like, you know, something kind of exciting. So that's what I'll, something exciting, something scary, something, and it has to be fast, and once you got them, you know, and it doesn't have, and that original thing that you do does not have to be any part of your story that you're going to do. But the thing is, you have to reel them in. And once they bought into your world and kind of understand it, that's when I actually throw the story in.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah, I completely agree with that methodology. That's when I did that for the previous D&D campaign, I just said, hey, there's a dungeon. You guys should go get it. And from there, depending on what they did, I'm like, okay, I can do story hooks there. I can do story hooks there. All right, let me just start improvising a story.
Yeah. The thing is, like, I already have the idea for the story. I just have to, first thing to do is you got to get them hooked. You got to get them sold on the world. You've got to get them, you know, like Food Fight in Shadowrun is a very, very good get them interested. Because there's no real plot, no real story behind it. It's just guns and bangs and a good old romp, you know. And but then afterwards, it's just like, all right, they've, you know, they experienced what some of the high points can be. And I already have a story that I'd want to do, you know. But the thing is, I got to get them to buy in.
Mm-hmm.
So I will actually have. The thing is, like, because what I will do, and it's weird, when I create the world, when I have the world, the story is already kind of sort of built into it. You know, the world and the story kind of, I get the idea for them both usually at the same time.
Okay.
Because I have to create the environment that'll make them want to explore this weird thing I've thrown in there, this adventure or this creeptastic thing. So, you know, for me, I actually do a lot of the story building when I do world building. They just don't know that I did that.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'm a big fan of front loading.
I never do that. I never front load everything.
Front loading by, like, the characters. I want the players to basically give me, like, hey, here is this, you know, this thing that my character does, and he's really all about this one thing. Cool, huh?
Awesome.
And so they help build not only the story, because I make them, I want them to do that before I actually start putting everything together. I can usually lay out a story in a matter of like an hour.
So what you're saying is we all three do the same thing. We just kind of slightly organize it a little differently.
Probably, yeah.
That's what it sounds like.
it's the thing, I think it's also mentally where we go with it, you know? Because, Justin, you know, you have that everything's in my brain. And because everything's in my brain, I can mod it on the fly, which is awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Me, though, it's... not exactly. It's like certain parts of the world are not going to change no matter what the PCs do within reason. No, I'm sorry. Weird, bad experience. No. Two crits in a row. Nope. You're still not... No. You still don't get the dragon. Sorry. You can't. Your charisma's not that awesome.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of... You know, my thing is, and if they don't touch the story, that's okay. It's still going on. Mm-hmm. They're just not doing it, and they'll have to deal with the fallout.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, definitely.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, if you choose to ignore what's going on in the background, yeah. you have to face consequences.
It's impossible to basically force your players to pick up the story that you think, well, that you want to run. Unless... you specifically tell them, hey, look, because there's that option too is, hey, look, I have this idea. This is what I want to run. Build characters that fit inside this framework.
Mm-hmm.
And there's nothing wrong with doing that. I've seen lots of people that they have a story they want to tell. And... if you don't make a character that fits that story, they don't know how to change to, like, well, you haven't made, none of your characters that you've made fit my idea because they didn't want to give away too much. And it's
yeah, like, I had a GM like that, you know. He had everything planned out in his game. And, you know, it was pretty much he was trying to puppeteer.
Yeah.
Rather than let us organically explore his world, you know, and when we would, you know, it's like, okay, we're trying to track down this villain and he's always giving us a slip. So as players, we all went, F this, we're tired of it. We ain't doing this anymore. And we were going to leave the city. So he ham-fisted, you know, the big confrontation thingy.
Yeah.
And it was, oh, God, there was no pacing, and the characters that we had built, you know, did not fit. They kind of did, but, you know, the power level was skewed. Like, dudes, it was a D&D campaign. Dudes' AC were so high, we couldn't hit them except on a 20.
Yeah.
But that was the next step in the story, but we just didn't have the XP for it.
Yeah.
It was.
And I've seen that happen too. And yeah, you have to be careful so that you actually do stuff that the players are capable of maintaining that power level.
Well, I mean, you could do stuff that they can't beat if it's appropriate. But at the same time, game masters have to remember, you are playing a game first. Well, you may want to tell a story.
We all have to have fun.
Right. If the players aren't interested in that story, then you didn't do a good enough job ahead of time
selling the story.
Know. Yeah, selling what the story would be.
Or didn't understand your players knowing that, like, if all of us want to do hacky slashy, you know, kill everything, and you put us in, like a stealth, slow-moving noir crap, and none of us want to play something like that,
we've all made D&D characters. Your heading is Pride and Prejudice.
Yeah. Exactly. And I hated that.
Yeah.
And it, you know, and you, and if you don't tweak your story, you know, it's like, all right, there's supposed to be a big bad, you know, and if you're supposed to lose to the big bad, you know, in for your story, all right, cool. But if one, if they beat it, don't do the, you know, modding the monster.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's, you know, when you were kids, like, I have this superpower, and then I have a superpower that just nullifies all your powers, and it's really stupid. Yeah, don't do that. You know, or if the thing is, though, you have to, even in the stories, you still have to drop small kinds of hints, even in a, you know, just to let them know is like, all right, and you see this big bad, they try a couple swings, big monster steps on their head. You have to let them see that you, that running away is all right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
If you haven't, you haven't told the story right. You haven't set the world right. You know, if they're not aware that running away is all right.
Yeah.
You made a mistake. Unless, you know, they're, that's their kind of character. Like, they're a gung-ho barbarian that never turns down, and they've already shown that before. You know.
Yeah.
Having the other PCs drag the dude away, that's fine.
Yeah. And there's nothing wrong with that. But they need to know that it's okay to run away from a fight.
Yeah, and you're not going to... And here's the thing. You run away from the fight, our old GM docked us XP.
For running away from a fight?
Yeah, because...
No.
They should never play Burning Wheel.
Yeah, because we got... You know, we already had two PCs die in this encounter. We all wanted to run. One, the room was set up so we were all trapped in there.
Oh.
Stupid. And when we tried to find other ways just to avoid the fight so the monster would go away, he's like, well, you didn't beat the challenge. No XP for that. I'm like, you waxed two of the PCs and the rest of us that survived it don't get anything?
Yeah.
Dude.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's bad storytelling.
Yes, it
is. That's one of the things I liked about Burning Wheel, was that unlike D&D, where you get experience for winning things constantly, in Burning Wheel, you get experience points basically for failing, because you've learned what you do wrong, versus, oh, we've conquered this challenge that's so easy that it's become minuscule to us. You don't really learn anything from doing things you've done again.
Yeah.
If you lose, mm-hmm. you learn what you did wrong, and can do better next time.
Yeah. Yep. Without a doubt. I mean, that is one of the most fundamental things. Like, anytime somebody loses, they learn something from it.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. Well, I think organizing for your story is... We've told you how we do it.
Mm-hmm.
And there's really not... There's not a
there's
wrong
no right way.
Way. There's no right way. There's no wrong way. There's just... This is the ways that the three of us do it.
Man, mind way is the best way.
Well, hey, when you're running a game, yeah, because I've played in your games. You are a monster brilliant, like... You have this almost like smirk, and it's brilliant because I can tell you're thinking it's just like, all right, they could, and you're already like four steps ahead on possibilities that we might be able to do.
Yeah.
And it's brilliant. I love it. And Zendead, you've got the way it's just like you're able to like feed us breadcrumbs to get to your story without, you know, opening our mouths going, here, shovel.
Yeah,
it's
well,
really cool. I mean, I love both of you. You got really cool techniques on that. I love it. They're both. It's such a unique experience on each of them. I don't know. Yeah. Best way to put it, I guess. I don't know. It's
well,
like
well, the one
Justin's
okay,
kind of freewheeling.
Defense,
yeah,
in my
Justin's
defense,
a little more freewheeling. You're the one that we don't know that we're eating the breadcrumbs. We don't
yeah.
know. We don't know we're doing it. But you're making us do it, and we don't realize it. And we thank you for it.
Yeah, I do enjoy that part of it. That is one thing that I do love doing is
I recognize when Derek is, like, dropping the breadcrumbs. But see, to my mindset about that is,
ooh, piece of candy. Ooh, piece of candy. Because yeah. I know where it leads. I know there's trouble at the end of this road, but you know what? I'm enjoying the path to get there.
Yeah. And that's part of the fun is it's not always about the end story. All stories are actually about the journey to wherever the story takes you.
Mm-hmm.
And that's part of the joy in presenting your story in this particular medium, not just like I have to write this whole story and know exactly what we're doing all the time. You don't have to do that. There's a lot more with role playing. There's a lot more interaction, not only with anything else, but because you have other collaborators hitting you with other things that you may not have thought about, but you now have to fit into the context mm-hmm. of the greater story that you're trying to
yeah.
have and present to the
You can't railroad. Players. You can't railroad your story.
Oh, you can. But- you can. It's just as a general idea, a bad one. Mm-hmm. And most people will tell you that railroading is a bad idea.
There's occasional things, you know, that maybe you might predetermine, like the group gets arrested, you know, but
that's setting a stage.
Yeah.
It comes down to this. If you're going to railroad, make sure the train's invisible.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Either that or make the train so luxurious and opulent they don't realize they're a railroad. They just think they're taking a cool trip.
Yeah.
That's an invisible train.
Yep. Yeah,
that's the invisible train.
I love it.
So.
I love it. That's cool. You guys have the better metaphors, I guess. Simile, meta, whatever. Eh.
All right. Well.
That's the smart ones.
We are going to wrap this part up, and we will be moving on to our illustrious stat blocks. And now we enter Stat Blocks. This is a segment where you can use something that we've created in your game tonight.
Then... I can't help but notice this week's Stat Blocks are, a little, light?
Well, okay. Here's the deal. Poor Jules has been sicky, so she gets a pass this week.
Okay, that's fair for her.
She gets a pass this week, but she has promised that she has something so dark and creepy for us all next time.
I don't know why you like it when I go really dark and creepy and scary, and you're like, "Wah, that's wrong," and you still like it.
Yeah,
well not next time. Because next week's episode's a bit special involving stat blocks.
That is true. Isn't it? That is true.
Do you want to give him a hint? Or do you want to just let him...
We're just going to let that stew. No, we're just going to let that stew for the week and a half, or 2 weeks, till they get to it. I want to tell you all. We are not going to do that yet. We're gonna drag it out a little bit. We're going to feed him breadcrumbs.
Very well. Have a piece of candy.
Here's a piece of candy. Ooh, piece of candy. And I sat down to write my stat block, and I have a full page of typed notes. That's just the notes. I haven't actually started going anywhere with those notes other than some basic fundamental ideas on the stat block. And I didn't realize that I had hit a page until I noticed the page break and it started on the second page, and I kept writing to finish out the thought. And then I was sitting there with my wife kind of explaining it to her, and her first reaction was, "Well, I hate this part." And I'm like, "Okay, well, this is work in progress here, so just work with me here." And she goes, "So what game system are you going to run this in?" And I'm like, what's kind of open. You're supposed to be able to use it at any. She goes, no, this is a campaign that you've come up with.
There we go.
So my stat block would be really long. So instead, what I'm going to do is I'm going to draw up a few locations and do like I did with the other ones, and those will be available as a separate PDF download that you can get.
Fair enough. That'll make up for it.
Yeah. Because I don't know. I don't know if anybody enjoyed the first ones that I did, but...
You did. That's the important part.
I had fun. So, no. Hit us with yours.
Once more, we step into the catalog.
Yay! I'm sorry. These are some of my favorite things you do, man. I love them.
Well, this particular one was an idea submitted by a friend of mine, Dakota Lewis. He's a, kind of a good friend of the show.
Yeah.
And he suggested the idea of the Wings of Amdalore. Have you ever wanted to see the world? Like, all of it? With the grace of donning these earrings and giving them a simple tap, you'll be whisked away to a bird's eye view. Enjoy the breathtaking view afforded to young Icarus as you linger in the sky and see the never-ending horizon of the world. Caution. The Wings of Amdalore does not grant the user the ability to fly. Like young Icarus's melted wings, you too will plummet to the ground and shall make fast friends with its firmament. Tapping the earrings again may afford you safety from the situation, as you are once more brought to an amazing height, where there too shall you fall downward, bound in an endless cycle of madness and fear. The Wings of Amdalore see the world forever, until the world take you. Order with caution. All purchases are recorded, and authorities will be notified.
That is Sweet! Hilarious.
Dude, like I said, maybe idea for, because Zendad, you are actually more graphically inclined than I ever will be. You know, I think we ought to make, and I'm using Benaret, the catalog.
I have thought about it, actually. I have thought about doing.
Yeah, because I don't come up with like ideas like that, although... Maybe for the special event, I actually might try and put something in the catalog.
Nice.
And also, I don't know how well I'll do it. That's because the thing is, like, that's your baby. I don't know if I could imitate that, but I can make it. Oh, it's okay.
Feel free to play in my sandbox.
But see, this is the other thing. Like, so we could actually theoretically do this and make it as a Patreon exclusive.
Yep. You could actually pick up a copy of the catalog.
Yeah.
Think about that. That makes you kind of cool, you know?
Yeah.
That might be pretty fun.
We'll have to talk about this one at a later time, not on the air. So, right.
Yeah, that is true. That is true. But still, I mean, if you guys actually would want that, you know, message us. Let us know that'd be something you guys would be interested in.
Yeah.
You know, we would, don't be afraid to send us, like, cool ideas or, you know, this and that, the other, you know, ways to compile stuff or, you know.
You can be a little afraid.
Yeah.
Because we will use them.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. I can pretty much take anything you love and cherish and turn it into a nightmare.
It's always the best way to do it.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, now we will now step, because that was a great end for stat block, since it was the only one. So it would be a stat block. And, we're going to kick into our lexicon.
Lexicon, where we give you cool words to help improve your vocabulary.
So the word this week is comely, which is an adjective.
This is one of our SAT words, dude.
No, that's not where I learned this word from. To me, this was always the seventh attribute added in D&D to people.
Yes, it was.
Ah.
Where charisma is personality.
I
knew it from fairy tales, but mm-hmm. I remember this being on the frickin' SAT. That's the only... I learned the word when I was younger, because I read a lot of old fairy tales and stuff. But I remember being drilled into our heads in ninth grade for the SATs.
That is funny. So, since we all know what it is, we're just going to jump right into the official definition. And that is pleasurably conforming to notions of good appearance, suitability, or proportion. And the second definition is having a pleasing appearance, i.e. not homely or plain.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. You usually would use this when you're describing someone, a lady that is pretty, but is not putting all the goods out on display, but she is still pretty, and it doesn't have that super heavy underlying sexual tone to it.
Right.
Yeah.
It's pleasing.
Yes.
There's a reason for that. And there's a reason for that, and we'll get to that in the first known uses.
Ah.
So, the sidebar. Although comely is now typically used to describe the appearance of human beings, it actually was used more broadly of other appealing things, like clothing.
Hmm.
Comely can be traced back to an Old English word meaning lovely, glorious, or fine. If you're looking to pretty up your prose or poetry with additional words meaning beautiful, English is well supplied with them.
No kidding.
So.
You know, but if you go up to somebody on the street, it's like, man, those are comely boots. You're going to get some weird eyebrow raises.
Yes.
I will tell you that for nothing.
Yeah, you will. Now, so some origins and etymology of the word. Middle English, comely, which is an alteration of the Old English, seimlich, or glorious, from seimy, which is lively or fine. It's also akin to Old High German, kummig, which is weak.
Good Lord. Hmm.
Well, I mean, if you weren't manly and you were pleasing, you were weak. And its first known use was in the 13th century, so the whole not putting all the goods out for display, it's your time frame. So,
sure.
Yeah.
That's why I think it ended up taking it was applied to the appearance of people later on. But with it being used in that time frame, it kind of gave that over time, basically.
Mm.
It came to mean people being attractive and pleasing of appearance instead of just like your clothes or, you know,
Makes sense.
Chariot or something. So, yeah.
That is one comely chariot, my friend.
It is. It really, really is. So, we are going to start wrapping this bad boy up with some closing remarks. Hit it, Jules.
Oh, wonderful. All right. Well, as everyone that has listened to my podcast or this podcast knows, I have this kind of affinity for things that are a little twisted. I came across, thanks to my delightful husband texting me in the middle of the day on Tuesday, I had no idea what the heck he was talking about. I came across probably one of the most neat and disturbing video games. It's called Bendy and the Ink Machine. Now, we've all seen like that old Steamboat Willie, early Disney, you know, that kind of style.
Mm-hmm.
Well, this developer named The Meatly created, and it's Chapter 1. And Chapter 1 is free. You can get a link to all of that in the doobly-doo. And, you know, good news is Episode 1 is out. You can, you know, it's Episode 1 is kind of pay what you want. Episode 2, he is going to charge. It has been lit on Steam Greenlight. But it's like those, you know, like early Disney, and then, you know, like Oswald the Rabbit.
Isn't this the one that every single cell in the game has been hand-drawn?
I don't know if it's hand-drawn. I haven't gotten I haven't, because it's only the first chapter, and it's maybe 10 to 15 minutes, maybe a little longer. I think this is like a one or maybe two man studio, I guess. But, you know, Bendy is this very early Disney-esque styled demon character. And you get a letter and from your old friend that you used to do animation with. And you go back there and you're like, what the heck is all this? So you're exploring it and it's Disney turned twisted. And the aesthetic is good. The sounds are good. It's not like, oh, you know, standard jump scare. It really starts to wreck your brain a little bit. The second episode is due out next month. He doesn't have a firm date yet. It was just lit on Steam Greenlight. You can go to the dude's Patreon if you want to support it. But that was probably one of the coolest things I've ever played. And the reason I found out about it is there is a there's a Let's Player / animator / composer named DA Games. And he played it, loved it, and then he wrote a song about it called Pildar Machine. And nice. It's dark style with the techno jazz ragtime-ish piano.
Oh, fun.
Yeah, there's a link to that too. And he's using this, the characters. He actually pulled like images out of the game and he animated the little Bendy character kind of dancing with a smile and little tap shoes and stuff. And the song is amazing. Yes, I bought it after I heard it immediately. And then I bought the game because it was awesome.
Nice.
And I love it. And the best thing is the developer, the guy that's making the game, you know, he finds out about this. He'll go to the dude's YouTube channel and it's like, this is unbelievably awesome. He will actually interact with people that are making fan content of his content. That's and he's great. Like, I'm so happy. It's like, I'm so happy my little game is, you know, people are enjoying it this much. So that was just like, oh my, wow. That's a cool developer. So, yeah, sorry for rambling on it, but it's...
No problem.
Wow. I mean, you'll enjoy it. Trust me.
That sounds really cool.
Oh, yeah. You'll like it. All right. How about you guys?
Justin, go.
Well, I finally caught up with the latest Harry Potter universe movie. Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them. I know I'm like months late. But
I haven't even seen it. I haven't even listened to it. I haven't had a chance.
Well, there's nothing to read because it apparently went straight to being a movie and not a book, which is cool. It's interesting.
I thought they had the screenplay out.
Nope. That's a different Harry Potter thing. That's a Harry Potter and the Cursed Child.
You're right.
With a big controversy, but we'll get to that later. So Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them is wonderful. It does not hold your hands. Whereas we talk a lot about world building in the show. And where Harry Potter kind of slowly introduces you to things in the world. And this is what a house elf is. And that's what wands do. And blah, 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 blah. Fantastic Beasts does not. It relies on you either picking up context from what they say and do. Or assumes you're already a fan and are just already understanding completely. If it's important, it will explain it a little bit more. But for the most part, if it just is, it just is.
Oh, wow.
The story is wonderful. It's a few places that you kind of see where it's going to go. But then there's also one of the major plot things has a really lovely twist about it. And I don't want to go to any spoiler territory with it because it is a lot of fun. The characters are enjoyable. There's not a single, you know, magic student around. They're all adults who live functional adult lives.
Ooh, I like that.
Yeah. And it's great seeing how a magical society works as opposed to how it exists in this little bubble that is Hogwarts.
Oh, nice.
Sweet. So they expanded the world.
Significantly, especially since the movie takes place in New York in the early 20th century.
Huh.
1920s.
Ah!
Oh,
so it's,
wow.
It's that nice little edge between what we think of as the modern world.
Yeah.
Meeting, you know, kind of this, you know, the ancient kind of magic medieval world.
Yeah, it's like post-Victorian and magic
mm-hmm.
versus, you know, steampunk pushing up against modern.
Ooh. Yeah.
And so that's what I like about it, because unlike Hogwarts in the setting, you know, even though it's 1990s in the Harry Potter movies, you wouldn't really know it's the 90s in the movies, except when they're back in the real world.
Right.
Because Hogwarts is, again, like this bubble that exists outside. Whereas in this movie, even when you're in the areas of magical people, they're surrounded by the trappings of the 1920s. They're yeah. part of their world. It answers the questions that you have with Harry Potter of, well, how would these students deal with something, you know, that was like a meme on the internet or things like that? Because they wouldn't get it. It's like, well, actually, if they were real adults in the setting, they do.
That's cool.
Because
sweet.
So, really enjoyed it. There's, again, a few things that, you know, kind of irk me, but I'm kind of a really picky person about different storytelling elements. But overall, give it an A.
Awesome. That is so cool.
Mm-hmm.
So I am going to give a shout out to a podcast who does not need any shout outs, but
oh,
why
I know
are we giving them one?
Oh yeah.
I have been listening to this show since the second episode. And it is called Up and Vanished. It was written. The host of the podcast is a documentary filmmaker from Atlanta. And there was a missing persons case in Southern Georgia of this teacher whose name was Tara Grinstead. And she literally one night just disappeared. She up and vanished. And he started this show to try to find out what happened to her. Well, what's interesting is that this guy, from the beginning, it was always, I'm trying to find out what happened and bring the family some kind of closure on this whole thing. And his season is about to end, like, 3 or 4 more shows from now. And that was going to be the end of, he was going to basically give out everything he had on the Tara Grinstead, like background information that he had been able to find, kind of with where he was at, because he was kind of up to date with everything mm-hmm. that had been happening. Well, 2 weeks ago, they just, the Georgia Bureau of Investigation put out a warrant for 2 people in relation to this case. Somebody came forward and told them who to look at. One of the dudes admitted.
Wow.
Whoa.
Yeah, they have found the guy who killed her, supposedly. It is amazing. And in just the last year, that's how long he's been doing. Like, I don't even think it's been a year. I think it's been like 24. It's been about 24 weeks. Maybe it's been maybe a year now. But in just that time frame, he amped up the interest in this case so much in this little, small Georgia town that somebody finally stepped up and
That's
said
crazy.
Something. Yeah.
Wow.
And, like, he was, like, he's been interviewed by, like, NBC, ABC, like, all these big networks now are starting to talk about this show. Because he's done something that nobody thought would ever happen. A cold case that had been cold for 12 years got cracked.
That's amazing. That is
brilliant.
Yeah. So
wow.
I started listening to it because I was like, I need to find something new to listen to on Spotify. And I found it on Spotify. But it's on iTunes. I mean, it's everywhere. And it is so amazing. And he does, like, you know, special things where he'll talk about, like, the actual case evidence that they've been able to find and everything. I mean, it's phenomenal. So go out, listen to this podcast. There is a link in the show notes. Like I said, anybody that really follows a lot of podcasts and knows anything at all about, like, true crime stuff, this is, like, all over the board right now. Like, people are talking about it everywhere. Wow. So, yeah. He doesn't need a huge audience anymore.
He got one.
But he got one, and he did something that nobody else... Well, and the thing is that he just finished a Kickstarter to do season two, which the detective that had been helping him a lot, the two of them were going to do a different cold case that he had been working on. And they got it financed. So there's going to be a new one that's going to cover a different case, doing the same sorts of things, because it's investigative journalism and documenting the whole thing. So, yeah. It's amazing. Go out and definitely give it a listen.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So,
wow. That's just wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he's just like, I don't know what to say anymore, because, like, he's just like,
dude's awesome, man.
It did everything that I ever hoped it would do. So, yeah, it's pretty cool. So that's mine. And
that's it, then.
That's it.
And we will see you guys next week with a very, very special episode. And then...
Teasers.
Then the following one, I'm going to say this now, is tentative. We're not 100% sure, but there may be an interview episode coming up. So... if everything works out, then we will be having an interview before we kick off our next segment, which is going to be basically table stuff. Once you're actually at the table playing, some of the things that you can do to step it up a notch. And we will see you guys next week with that crazy, crazy, super secret episode.
Sounds good to me.
Yep.
All right, guys.
See you guys in the next episode.
Yep.
Ta-ta till then.
Bye. You can contact us or the show by using Twitter, Facebook, or regular old email. Our Twitter accounts are... at Zended,
at Jules Podcaster,
and at Mo Operations.
And the show's Twitter account is at Seize the GM.
And you can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/SeizeTheGM.
You can email questions or comments to the show at admin@SeizeTheGM.com.
You can email me at Zended@SeizeTheGM.com.
Me at Jules@SeizeTheGM.com.
And me at nulloperations@seizethegm.com.
Thanks for joining us for this episode of Seize the GM. Feel free to leave a comment about this episode on our webpage, www.seizethegm.com. Let the dice fall where they may, and we'll see you again next week.
Seize the GM is released under a Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, Share-alike 4.0 International License. All copyrighted materials referenced herein are held by the respective owners. No infringement is intended, and no claim of ownership is implied.
The music for the show is Dreaming Spirit, off of the album Ghost Machine, by The Enigma TNG. His music is released under a Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, No Derivatives 3.0 Unported License.